This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We know that exercise makes us physically fit. It helps us to control our weight and be heart healthy, but it also helps our mental faculties take shape. Exercise makes your brain function better and may even stave off depression and lessen anxiety. In fact, our guest this hour says he's discovered a protein in the brain that results from exercise, which acts as a kind of miracle grow for the brain, and he's joining other experts in attempting to re-engineer school practices to take advantage of these new discoveries. Dr. John Rady is Associate Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, a research synthesizer, speaker, and author, and he joins us for the hour. Welcome to Charlotte. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be with you here in a beautiful state with the weather so great. I just came from Boston where it's still chilly and rainy.
Well, you'll be praying for rain by the time this day is over because you'll be hit by allergies if it doesn't rain.
Okay, I've already had a little taste of it.
You are the author of a book called Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain, which is described as a groundbreaking exploration of the connection between exercise and the brain's performance. Now, we've done other programs in the past on how exercise helps you think better, faster, keeps the whatever's up there moving along. How is your book and your findings different from what we already know? You don't know what we already know, I suppose, but how is it different?
Well, I think what I did is I reviewed over 1,000 articles in the medical literature and that they're scientifically based and tried to put it together in normal, understandable language. We always aim to try to write for a fifth grader, not to insult anybody, but try to get it so that people understand it and put enough stories in there as well. But I think what we show now is we know what happens more or less. It's hard to say we know anything that really happens in the brain when it really comes down to it. But we know what happens when we exercise and all the wonderful things that it does in terms of releasing neurotransmitters, all these new growth factors that we're learning more about every single week or so, the blood flow difference that exercise brings to the brain. But the way I've come to think of it is exercise is mainly for the brain, and the effect on the body is just a wonderful side effect.
Is it the blood flow that is really helping the brain do what it does, increase blood flow?
That's one part of it, but a big part of it is that when we're exercising, we're using more of our brain cells than we do in any other activity.
Really?
Now, that's what most people don't understand.
How is that possible?
Well, because our brain evolved, our thinking brain evolved from our moving brain. We became better movers, and this turned into our thinking brain. And this then gets activated every time we're moving. So when we're moving around, standing, walking, running, jumping, playing, all those nerve cells that are involved in thinking also and in appreciating and understanding, sequencing, imagining, evaluating consequences, all these wonderful human parts of the brain that make us most human are activated, turned on. And when they're turned on, that helps the brain grow. That helps those brain cells grow. We now think of the brain as a muscle. So just like our muscles respond when we activate them and we challenge them, we stress them a bit, they grow. Everybody sort of understands that, our heart and our other large muscles. But the same way with our brain, when we think, when we challenge ourselves, that's why today, all this stuff came really in the 90s when we began to learn about the brain, but also we're starting to worry about Alzheimer's disease in a big way and looked at it. There's a big, huge study, international study, looking at what prevented the onset of Alzheimer's disease, and there were three factors. One was ideal weight and low caloric intake.
Mm-hmm.
Second was continuous learning. So that's why Sudoku and crossword puzzles and playing chess and bridge and all those things and keeping active and keeping a mission before you is so important. It was the second big variable that prevented the onset of cognitive decline in aging and in the aging brain. And the third was exercise. And it was far more what we call robust or a big finding, had a bigger impact than any of the previous two, and including when they factored out its obvious effect on lowering blood pressure, lowering stroke potential, and improving cardiovascular function and blood flow to the brain, which is very important, obviously, to keep our brain healthy. But it had some of this, some other more important factors in preventing our cognitive brain from declining.
Hmm.
So they started a whole bunch of studies looking at this in animals first, trying to figure out exactly what was happening. One quick study they did that broke open the whole field was they put a bunch of mice and taught them how to run in a hamster wheel, did the mice SATs before and after, then had a group of their brothers and sisters in other cages where they did the same thing, kept them for 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. The mice learned how to run on these hamster wheels, and they ran for 4 kilometers a night.
My gosh.
On their own. And then they tested them again. Their SAT scores went up 20% after 8 weeks. Then they looked at their brains, opened them up, saw that their brains were thicker. They were better connected in the top part of their brain, the cortex, and there was areas of the brain that were bigger than they were before they started.
Wow.
So this led to this whole revolution.
So mice running 4 kilometers a night is pretty remarkable, actually. It seems to me that would be like a human being running, I don't know, from here to Washington, D.C. and back. But what kind of exercise must you do to see these improvements? Does it have to be vigorous? Does it have to be often? Does it have to be long in terms of the number of hours you devote to it every day? Or
well,
can it be a 15-minute walk in a park?
It could be a 20-minute. Let's put it at 20 minutes.
Right.
We know that. Or in terms of a walk, but if you do 10 minutes of moderate intensity exercise, you're going to get some positive effect immediately. But of course, like anything else, more is better up to a certain point.
Uh-huh.
We have guidelines from the Health and Human Services for physical health. Is about an hour five times a week, and three of those times is to be moderate intensity, meaning you're driving your heart rate up pretty good,
mm-hmm.
to 70-80%, where you're sweating and you certainly can't talk and walk and talk at the same time. Those all have the kind of positive effects that we see.
And is it age dependent? In other words, does equal amounts of exercise benefit people of all ages? Do you need more when you're older, less when you're older, more when you're younger, less when you, how does it work?
Well, I think you know, when you're younger, we used to. Now, that's the biggest problem we have today is that the young kids are acting like the elderly in terms of not moving around very much because they're sitting in front of their video boxes and their computer games and texting and sitting, the sedentary lifestyle. So I think at all ages this works. Most of our research was done on the elderly, and now it's starting to get into work with the kids and see the similar kinds of effect. When you look at fit kids or kids that are do well on a fitness challenge versus the unfit kids, they do about 10-15% better on scores, and their brains are a little bigger than the unfit kids.
How do we know that? Because we don't open a kid's brain up.
Not like the mice, but our fancy scans, and we're getting better ones,
right.
And we're able to see that now.
And so just like the mice SATs went up after exercise, we are seeing demonstrable improvement among people of all ages?
Of all ages. Bigger as we're older, bigger changes usually. If you're sedentary and then you start exercising 3 to 4 times a week, your elderly SATs are going to go up about 15%.
How does that manifest itself? For somebody who does not sit down and take a series of tests
right.
that doctors administer, how would I know yeah. that I'm different because yeah. of this?
Well, it's hard. It's so hard for a person to know, but their memory's better. Mm-hmm. They're thinking faster. They don't get fixated on something. They're able to switch sets, switch an idea instead of say doing the same damn thing again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the kinds of things that people can see. They're basically memory and learning. And then of course you get all that's just from the cognitive side. And then you get all the emotional positives where the motivation goes way up. You're feeling more energy, or you're more aroused. You can persist in your activities, and
you're present.
You're more present. That's a good way to put it. And you stop procrastinating as much, which is always a big thing that we all do.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about what I mentioned in the very beginning of the program, and this Miracle-Gro for the brain, this protein that you discovered that acts like a Miracle-Gro for the brain. How did you find it?
Well, it wasn't. Let's go back to the mice study, because I just named it.
Okay.
Yeah, I named it because when that study came out, it came out of the University of California, and they were talking about this substance called BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is no one wants to ever say again. We were talking of calling it fertilizer, brain fertilizer, because that's what it does. And so I deemed it Miracle-Gro for the brain in the press, and everybody started quoting that and talking about that. So that's how it got labeled. I got identified with it.
So what's it doing?
What it does is everything that fertilizer does. It keeps your, and you think about our 100 billion brain cells, it keeps our brain cells growing. It keeps them from dying. It keeps them from eroding. It promotes them to do what they're supposed to do when we learn, which is to grow and change. You know, people don't realize this, but in the past 10 years we learned the only way we learn anything is for our brain cells to actually grow. They have to grow and change. They have to add more neurotransmitters and more receptors and all these other things, and that genes have to be activated.
But we thought for the longest time, correct me if I'm wrong, that you, as you aged, you lost forever cells. And you're telling me that the thinking has reversed on this.
Well, it's changed a bit. It's changed a lot, actually. We do lose brain cells, but we also gain new brain cells. Now, there's two parts to it. One, we make the cells we have, which is 100 billion of them, which is a lot of them. Mm-hmm. We make them better and make them stronger and make them less resistant to erosion. But we also create new brain cells every day in a process called neurogenesis.
Which we'll come back and talk about. And I want to find out more about this Miracle-Gro for the brain as well. Our guest is Dr. John Rady from Harvard Medical School, author of Spark, the Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
And you've got to tune to 90.7 FM WFAE in Charlotte. And you're listening to Charlotte Talks, where support comes from WFAE members in the Wake Forest University MBA program for working professionals, now located in Uptown Charlotte. Information at 1-888-WAKE-MBA. And Trader Joe's, a neighborhood grocery store offering shoppers a variety of pumpkin-y products like pumpkin spice coffee and pumpkin bread baking mix. Locations and more at TraderJoe's.com. Gay and Gray, a look at unique challenges for aging gay couples, from retirement choices to wills and end-of-life issues, when Charlotte Talks, Monday morning at 9 on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Top journalists take you behind the week's national headlines, discover something you didn't know about the news and why it matters. Join us for the questions you want answered on the Friday News Roundup.
And tune in for Diane Rehm beginning at 10 a.m. here on 90.7 FM WFAE. We'll get back to Charlotte Talks here in just a second, here on 90.7 FM, WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. John Rady is our guest from the Harvard Medical School, author of Spark, the revolutionary new science of exercise in the brain. Let's go back to neurogenesis, these new cells that are being created every day. This is how new is this idea, this knowledge that we're doing this?
This knowledge is 10 years old, that we humans grow actual nerve cells. But we knew it in animals about 15 years ago. So only 5 years before we were beginning to. But like you said earlier, you know, we had all grown up with the idea that we just kept losing brain cells every day. And we do, but we also make new ones.
But because we make new ones, does this hold out special hope for people who thought, well, as I get older, I'm going to become forgetful. I may go into some sort of dementia or Alzheimer's. Are you saying then that if we play our cards right, if we exercise, if we eat the right foods, et cetera, that we can stave that off in many cases?
Yes, and the statistics are phenomenal. You know, and these are many studies, not just one, not just two, many studies from all over the world. These are the statistics. If you're middle age and you begin to exercise 4 times a week for 40 minutes and at a moderate intensity level, which means sweating, getting your heart rate up, challenging yourself every day, you will push back cognitive decline by anywhere from 10 to 15 years. There are some Alzheimer's groups, and there are a lot of them all over the world, but there are some of them that say that if you do that, you begin to cut your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease by anywhere from 30 to 50%. Now, this is held up again and again and again in all the countries that have been looking at it, and believe me, people have been studying this up and down. That exercise is really a snake oil for this century. It's certainly something we knew, but it really is true.
I'm going to get back to the Miracle-Gro part of this equation in a second, but first I want to take a phone call from Jim in Statesville, who has a question about exercise and the brain. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. The doctor was talking about exercising 5 times a week, with at least 3 of it being on the vigorous level. I exercise actually, I guess, essentially every day. I might miss one day a month, but I exercise very vigorously. I run about a 6-minute and 45-second pace,
wow.
And I run about 4 or 5 miles. And then I ride the life cycle for another 45 minutes or so.
Can I ask how old you are, Jim?
I'll be 50 in a couple of months.
Wow.
But, I mean, I've been doing this. I've run marathons. I've been doing this my whole life. But, I'm just, people have always, at the gym, think I'm nuts. And I kind of am. I'm just curious, though. I guess you'd say I'm essentially addicted to this kind of thing. People think I'm crazy. How could you be addicted to, you know, running your body into the ground? But I'm almost afraid. I mean, the doctor was almost getting it to the point where he was saying, if you go beyond, he said to a certain point, and then he didn't specify what that point was. Where you start seeing diminishing returns on this sort of thing.
So you're asking where that point is?
Yeah. And if I'm going over it,
yeah, okay.
Well, you're in pretty darn good shape, that's for sure. But I think what we start seeing is usually if you're running at the kind of pace you're running, and if you go over and keep your heart rate way the heck up at over an hour and a half or so, then you're starting to see problems develop, because then you're starting to tear down muscle, tear down even some of too much stress on the brain. So you really want to. Today we're looking more at high intensity, which you're doing, for shorter periods of time to give you the kind of beneficial effect that exercise can bring.
And every other day, every day or every
other
day?
Well, you can do it every day, but I mean, we, you know, the new Health and Human Services recommends 5 days a week of real exercise and the other 2 days of some kind of activity for an hour, a day to get yourself, to keep yourself moving. You know, when we were 10,000 years ago, we were moving anywhere from 10 to 14 miles a day. That's the way we're programmed. And when we end up sitting all the time. So I can't answer your question exactly because we don't know where the tipping point is, where that is, where it begins to pull at you. But I know a lot of ultramarathoners and a lot of cyclists and master swimmers who are 90. Okay, and they're doing quite well. So
plus, you're not an exercise physiologist; you're a psychiatrist.
Right, right.
But who would he see, and are there signs to look for? Who would he see to maybe give him a better answer? And are there signs that you can see in yourself that maybe you're overdoing it, or you ought to back off?
Well, I think the when you start getting more and more injuries, then you better worry. And I hope you've taking a look at my colleague's YouTube called The Barefoot Professor about the running.
Yeah.
Are you aware of the book Born to Run?
No, but I'm going to get it. I've heard of you're not talking about Amy Barefoot, are you?
No, but I'm talking about running 4 foot strike, you know, putting your weight forward. You don't have to run barefoot, but the Barefoot Professor does, and that's a new big craze these days, and all the shoe companies are altering the way they make shoes to preserve your knees, hips, and back.
My knees are shot.
Well, see, now you got to pay attention to that.
All right. Jim, thank you for your call. Congratulations on your incredible physical fitness. That's amazing, actually. This Miracle-Gro for the brain, what's producing it?
Okay.
And is it being produced in tiny doses if we don't exercise?
It's not just exercise. It's when our brain cells work.
Okay.
This is evolution's gift to us to help us grow.
Okay.
And so what happens when you stress the brain cell, each brain cell, when it fires, the more it fires, the more of this BDNF or this Miracle-Gro it makes. So therefore, the more you're using your brain, the more you make of this. For instance, when you're learning or when you're doing crosswords or when you're contemplating or trying to figure something out or just being involved in something and not just passively allowing the media to take over. You know, but when you're thinking about it, when you're engaged, your brain cell's working and you're making this stuff. But nothing makes it more than physical aerobic and anaerobic exercise. Aerobic we know the most about because it's hard as heck to get rats and mice to lift weights or to strike a yoga pose. But we can measure stuff in them, and the best way is, for instance, you were amazed at 4 kilometers a night of the mice, but now we have rat treadmills.
Uh-huh.
And we can put a treadmill in a rat's cage and teach them to run on their treadmill. And by the end of the first week, they're running 8 kilometers a day. And by the end of week 8, some of them are running 18 to 20 kilometers a day because they like it. Because one of the things of my Miracle-Gro, not mine, but of the Miracle-Gro of the brain, is it's also an antidepressant. It's also an anti-anxiety agent. And so it has all these wonderful effects.
Also, these rats in the wild, would they not be running that much?
They do. They run a lot.
So when they're caged, and you give them this treadmill, it's probably like manna from heaven.
Yeah, it is. It is. They love it. They love it.
If this Miracle-Gro is helping us to build better connections within the brain, which helps us think better, faster, smarter, it's making us smarter.
Right.
Right? So if you're leading a sedentary lifestyle, is that making us dumber?
It is. Unfortunately, it is. And
that explains a lot, doesn't it?
It sure does. It sure does. It makes us a lot dumber. And not only that, then we add body fat onto that, and that's our big enemy. And I know I was down here a bunch of times in North Carolina talking about the obesity crisis and how much that plays a role in affecting our brain in a negative way, not only helping it hastening the erosion of brain cells as we age, but also in our kids. Mm-hmm. And also it slows the brain down.
You know, kids are, we have this obesity epidemic of young people today. Is it too late? If you have a young person who is becoming obese, maybe even morbidly obese in some children's cases by the time they're teenagers, is it too late to reverse that, not only physically, but mentally? Can you start at any time and begin to make advances?
You can certainly, you'll always make advances. Whether you can recapture everything is probably not the case.
Wow.
You know, and for instance, at the age of a study down at the University of Florida showed that if you have morbidly obese children at the age of 4, and you compare them to their normal weight siblings at the age of 4 and follow them throughout their course of their development, their IQs are 30 points less than their normal weight sibs. And this was done by the medical genetics department down there. They ruled out any genetic cause that they could and said that the reason why there was a difference is because of this morbid obesity issue.
Which leads us to your campaign in schools, which we'll talk about in just a couple of seconds. Let's go back to the phones. Lawrence in Charlotte, you're on with Dr. John Rady on WFAE.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks, Dr. Rady, for the work that you're doing. I wondered if you've looked at studies by Richard Davidson at Wisconsin-Madison and others that have demonstrated with functional MRI that positive emotions and compassion meditation can modify the brain from children, bullies, to adults with recurring depression, and that there have been a lot of studies done. Emory down in Atlanta has done some work in that regard, and it would be wonderful to incorporate both an exercise program and a program that teaches children to meditate on loving kindness and compassion so that we can move through the world without, you know, the strife and wars that we have now.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the things we know is that the positive emotions, positive psychology, the meditation, being mindful, does increase our BDNF, our Miracle-Gro for the brain. It boosts it up for one thing, and that's not the only. By the way, that's one of many things that changes in the brain's chemistry. But yes, work is all over the place, showing the interaction there, and making our brains work better. We know it helps reduce the anxieties and improve depression, just like exercise does. Hmm. I don't think the studies show that exercise probably does it a little quicker, a little better, but it doesn't give you the same kind of focus on the other human that the kind of things you're talking about.
Would doing both reinforce the situation?
Oh, yeah, and I think what I would recommend is you do your exercise first and then you do them together, mindful exercise, and that's why I think the best kind of exercise is to be outside, doing something you enjoy, doing something to let you sort of get into yourself be mindful. A lot of times that's the way people get more mindful is when they're our last caller before this, who was running at such a great pace, he's probably very mindful when he's going for his miles run at 6 and 40 seconds or whatever he's doing. He's got to be sort of aware of himself and sort of contemplating. And we know that it improves our creative capacity. But, yes, I'm very familiar with Richie Davidson up in Wisconsin and all that. And the people that work on mindfulness, Dr. Kathleen Hall down in Atlanta is a good friend of mine. And she and I work together in promoting both spending time sort of becoming aware of yourself and who you are and where you are in the world, as well as keeping our God's gift to us, our body and our mind, at peak condition.
Lawrence, thank you for your call. Let me go to Anna. Yes.
Could I just say one more thing?
Yes.
I just wanted to make a plug for your show and your archives. You did have somebody from UNC Charlotte who was doing research in that, and he was on one of your programs. I think it was this year.
Okay.
So that the listeners might want to look back through the archives for that.
I'll have to do the same, because I got to tell you, I don't remember, but that's not unusual for me. I need to exercise more.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lawrence, for your call. Let's go to Indian Land. Anna, you're on WFAE.
Hi. My question is for Dr. Brady is, what can somebody do who is limited physically that can't get their heart rate or can't do that sort of exercise on a regular basis? What can they do?
Good question.
Well, it all depends on the kind of reasons why they can't. You know, people that can't run or can't be moving their legs can certainly move their upper body, you know, and activities like yoga, tai chi are good ways to get some of the benefits that we're talking about in physical, you know, harder exercise. You know, one study just showing walking for 20 minutes improved the test scores in 10-year-olds about 10% after just a 20-minute stroll.
If you are wheelchair-bound, for instance, could just moving the wheelchair, using your arms to power the wheelchair?
Absolutely, and I think that's what we see in the wheelchair racers and all, that they're, you know, pretty fit, and they keep themselves from getting depressed and demoralized.
And anaerobic exercise helps as well. So you could lift weights if you were in a wheelchair.
Sure. You could always do something. And all that has an effect, because your brain is employed in doing that. And when your brain's employed and engaged, that's what's great.
Anna, thank you for your call. I want to go to Spartanburg when we come back from the break, because Paul's been holding on for a while. He has a question. And then I want to talk about your trying to revitalize schools with this message of exercise and brain health. Dr. John Rady is our guest. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
And we appreciate you tuning in to 90.7 FM, WFAE in Charlotte. We'll get back to Charlotte Talks after this break. And support for our programming this morning comes from WFAE members and Hendrick BMW in Charlotte and Hendrick Motors in Hickory. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Coming up on Diane Rehm at 10 o'clock, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano told Congress Wednesday she would begin reviewing select immigration cases as the U.S. deportation rate reached an all-time high. Members of the Gang of Six met behind closed doors on Wednesday with the Deficit Super Committee. A panel of journalists joins Diane for analysis of the week's top national news stories. That's Diane Rehm coming up at 10 o'clock.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers from Car Talk, here to talk to you about a great way you can support this station.
Does it involve removing 20s from my wallet because my kids beat you to it?
No, it's the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. Instead of trading in your old car, you donate it and the station benefits from its eventual sale.
Or dismemberment in the case of my car.
Donate before the end of the year and you can deduct your donation in April. Check out the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. Go to WFAE.org.
Still more to come on Charlotte Talks, and don't forget to stay around at 10 o'clock for the Diane Rehm Show.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're in our Spirit Square studio today with Dr. John Rady, Associate Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and the author of Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. Paul in Spartanburg, welcome.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I have a lot of questions. What exercise program does the doctor do for himself?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I did this morning. I had a very limited time, which is part of my life these days, traveling around on my mission. I did about 30 minutes of exercise, and I do these sprints. I set the in the hotel, I set the treadmill up at 8 degrees and start off at walking about 4 miles an hour. Then I kick it up to 7.5 to 8 miles an hour for 30 seconds. And I did that four times in a 20-minute period. Did a little weights, and then I came up and was ready to go. Mm-hmm. It's what we call high-intensity interval training. Other days I'll do a longer run. I'm participating in a thing called Harvard on the Move. We're getting all the Harvard students and faculty to try and run a half marathon by next April, 2 weeks before the Boston next year. The whole campus is involved to get people moving, not just for their physical health, but for their mental health and cognitive health, to help them deal with all the stresses and strains of academia and the stresses they put on themselves, of course. To be among the best in the they can be, so that's my program myself. But I add weights in, which I don't really like that much. But as we age, we need to do more to keep our muscles going because they tend to go away pretty quick.
Okay, Paul.
What medications are they coming up with to take advantage of the BDNF?
Well, that's an interesting topic because, believe me, when we discovered BDNF and all the miracles that it does, the biotech industry went crazy on looking for ways to boost it up. Some of our antidepressants, lithium, some of the other drugs that we use for mood and anxiety boosts BDNF, but only do it half again as well as physical activity and exercise. So then people have looked at gene manipulation and all that, and nothing yet comes close to what you get when you physically are involved and active.
And I hope they don't come up with a drug for this, because right. I don't want to see the commercials every night on television.
No, that's right. It would be the biggest seller there ever was, believe me.
Tiger for your brain. Huh?
Yeah, tiger milk or whatever he calls it.
Tiger blood,
tiger blood. Yeah, no, that would be the biggest seller there ever was, tell you that. But one of the things I want to, let me put a plug in for North Carolina here, because a lot of my work is based out of, kept me interested through this 80s and 90s in how exercise was useful for treating depression, which all started and continued in at Duke University Medical School, and is to this day a very big focus for one of their departments there on the effect of exercise on mood, and they were the leaders. Now it's all over the world. People are looking at that. How much is necessary? What kind of intensity? What kind of duration? All those questions are being looked at. Unfortunately, we don't have drug company money to support looking for this holistic way of managing mood, anxiety, hostility, aggression, and attention, which happens to be one of the areas that I know quite a bit about.
One more question, Paul, because you held on so long.
When I'm an eye doctor, and I see lots of patients that come back every year, and I've had a number of patients just in the last 2 years that have lost a lot of weight, like 40, 50, 60 pounds, and they're like they were had diabetes, high blood pressure, and they've gotten they come back and say, I'm not taking any medications now, I'm not diabetic anymore. It's just incredible for those people.
Well, you must be inspiring them in such a good way. I'm telling you, that's a great. Usually, we hear the opposite, that people are coming back 40 tons heavier.
Well, he fixed their eyes, and they saw in the mirror how overweight they were, and they lost weight. Thank you for your call, Paul. I appreciate it.
I wish that was true. But yeah, it worked.
All right, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Larry in Pineville writes, "I exercise a lot, so this must be a good question." Is he smart? Why are professional athletes not necessarily smarter than the rest of us?
Well, you know, I always get the question about the dumb jocks, okay? And I always say, well, just think how dumb they'd be if they didn't exercise. You know, because I do think that a lot of them are very much better when they're in their training. Michael Phelps, for example, was diagnosed at the age of 9 as having attention deficit disorder, couldn't sit still in his class, put on Ritalin, started swimming 3 to 4 hours a day. By the age of 11, both he and his mom decided for him to get off medicine.
Yeah, tell me why this works, because this is one of the things that you point out. Exercise helps you get smarter because it helps you focus.
Yeah.
And you say it calms you, right? It turns on the attention system.
Right.
Is that why it works to help with ADHD and ADD?
That's one of the big reasons. I mean, there's so many factors why it helps, but that's certainly one of the biggest is it immediately acts like Ritalin. I say a bout of exercise is like taking a little bit of Ritalin, a little bit of Prozac, in just the right amount.
You think that's why we're seeing so many young people with ADHD and ADD, because they're sitting there and they're sedentary?
Right, they're sedentary, and they're constantly being their attention is being drawn shorter and shorter and shorter.
And you say that exercise reduces learned helplessness.
Yes. Learned helplessness is when you give up and you just say, well, I can't do it. I can't do it, so I'm going to retreat. I'm going to just not try to do anything in the world. And exercise helps reverse that course. It's a very big part of what we're doing with the military to help to deal with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder of our boys and girls coming back from the war zone, and because that's a form of the extreme form of learned helplessness where they're just giving up.
Kids used to play outdoors a lot, ride their bikes, roller skate, run in the woods, etc. And a lot of that has gone by the wayside because parents are fearful of letting the child out of the backyard. And then, of course, they go to school where they have to sit all day and learn. And you are on a mission to revitalize the schools. How should the schools be set up to take advantage of what we now know about brain and exercise?
Well, I think it's one to have certainly in the younger kids, is to have play be a big part of the day, or a bigger part than it is. And one of the things we're seeing is everybody's pushing for test scores to go up, and we're seeing cutting out recess, which is probably the dumbest thing we've ever done. But and recess where the kids are playing, not just playing on their little boxes to text each other or their iPhones, but actually interacting, playing, which is really important for our younger kids, and playing vigorously. So we're developing programs to have this happen where kids are moving and playing and having fun and learning the joy of movement.
And you've actually been working with some schools around the country. One, I believe, is in Naperville, Illinois.
Well, it's sort of the signature school that there's, give you some stats, there are 19,000 children in that school district. In 2003, when I learned about it, 3% of their kids were overweight, 3%. And that's because they had evolved this program this physical education program over 20 years that is the should be the icon for the country. It's an amazing program where all the kids are participating all the time, all based on fitness. And it's had a dramatic effect on their physical health, mm-hmm. but also their intellectual prowess.
And in Augusta, Georgia, I don't know whether this is one of the schools you work with. It is?
No, it's not.
But there's a study of 163 overweight children in Augusta, Georgia. Some were put on a 40-minute daily workout, some on a 20-minute daily workout. Others got no exercise program at all. And the more exercise, the better the children's grades became.
Right. That's done by Catherine Davis, who I do know. I'm not involved in that study, but I certainly know of it. And her work continues to show that if you begin to get these kids who were previously sedentary moving, mm-hmm. then not only do they start to lose weight, but their scores go up.
So what should schools do? I mean, we are in exactly what you're talking about. We have an enormous school system here, and they're having to cut money from the school system because $100 million has gone away.
Right.
And they're also trying to test children and judge teacher performance and all that good stuff, and we have a lot of overweight kids in the school system.
Right.
So how, if in the best of all possible worlds, if we could just turn this around, what would it look like?
Well, I think in the morning you would see the first thing in the morning, you would have 20 minutes of very intense, vigorous exercise and fun, no matter what the grade level, because it works at all grade levels. And that would get the kids aroused.
What do you do for kids who are not good at sports?
No. That's the point. That's the point about Naperville. It's not about sport. It's about movement. It's about being active. It's about fitness. It's about being at every level. The magic of Naperville was when they slapped on heart rate monitors and said you had to get in your heart rate training zone. So everybody was different. So the kids that are overweight or geeky or they're uncoordinated, they only had to get to a certain level, and the athletes had to work harder to get to that level. And this sort of homogenized that system and made it equal for everybody.
Were there goals to get better? For instance, if you're overweight and you can only get to a certain level, is next month you want to be at a higher level?
If you continue to be in that heart rate training zone, you're going to lose weight. And so it's going to be harder and harder. That's why you saw the drop-off.
And the kids bought into this? They like it?
Eventually they bought into it big time. At Naperville, for instance, for the past 9 years now, it's rated by the kids in the high school who do the same thing every day of fitness-based PE. It's rated the number one course, favorite course by both the kids, the parents, and the teachers because they love it. Because they've worked it in. It's not just running and lifting weights and exercise per se, but they do activities, and they brought sports back in. And sports are 2-on-2, 3-on-3. Everybody plays every day, different teams. No one's standing around. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Does it matter what time of day this is done?
It doesn't matter at all for the long term. For the short term, I think, you know, the best of all possible worlds, to get back to your earlier question, is to have it start in the morning, but then have it mixed throughout the day. East Carolina State University did a study called Deskercise about 3-4 years ago, showing that just doing 10 minutes at your desk twice a day had an effect.
Doing what?
Doing 10 minutes of exercise, doing running in place, doing jumping jacks, doing push-ups.
Well, Kimberly writes on Twitter, what about standing desks for children and for office workers? I've been using one for 4 months now, and I'm really amazed at the difference this small change has made.
Thank you for calling. That's part of my slide presentation this afternoon.
Standing desks.
Standing desks.
I wish I had one.
Oh, yeah. No, or a tread desk, which is a standing desk with a treadmill, and you're going about a mile an hour.
Now you're going too far.
Just a mile an hour. No, standing desks are coming back. Coming back. This is a Victorian kind of thing. We all used to stand at our desks.
Right.
Winston Churchill, Donald Rumsfeld, for God's sakes, had a standing desk.
You're going to put Herman Miller out of business here. Charlie on Facebook writes, I had a professor nearly 20 years ago in Psych 101 named Dr. Liu who himself was and is a psychiatrist, who told me in class that exercise was paramount to increased cognitive skills and was the reason the military does their PT first thing in the morning. Is that accurate? Seems like the services knew this for a while then, so why didn't we? And by the way, I love your guest's ability to speak to the layman. It's very appreciated.
Well, thank you.
What about that?
Absolutely. We've known it for a long time. We've known it since the Greeks. Come on. You know, the Greeks were, they married. The gymnasium was the place where they learned and they exercised. And it was part of everyday life.
Why have
life.
We forgotten that?
Because things have changed, and especially in the last 40 years. We have all these cyber toys, all these cyber tools that help us, that make life so much simpler and put us on our butts. And all we do is sit, and we sit longer, longer, longer. We're completely driven by the rapidity of our ability to switch channels. Instead of losing weight, we're watching The Biggest Loser. Instead of playing, we're watching our heroes out there playing for us, you know, and it's really, something that we really have to take stock of, because the obesity problem is not going away. It's not just about Jamie Oliver and changing foods, although that's so important. We have to be moving.
So not only does exercise make you smarter and think better and faster, it reduces anxiety, it reduces depression, it can help control ADHD and ADD, it will help you with addiction, it helps you with aggression problems, and it helps you through menopause.
Yes, exactly.
It's a miracle drug.
It is.
And you say we should think of it as medicine.
Absolutely. And so does the AMA. It said that about 3 years ago.
Dr. John Rady, Associate Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, author of SPARK, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. Thanks for the hour.
Thanks for having me.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is